This is the Rundown. Hosted by Luke Lipinski. 98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Hour number two of the show, live from the Auction Community Studios. Luke Lipinski here with you. Luke Robbins behind the glass. That means 100% of the people working on the show this evening are named Luke. Means you know you're in good hands right there, 100% of them.
Whole lot of Lukes.
Hopefully everybody's enjoying their Friday evening. It's 7 o'clock, so I'm guessing, I mean, I have no traffic report in front of me, but I'm guessing by 7 o'clock people are pretty close to home from work. Maybe you're back out on the road going wherever you want to go, but hopefully you're enjoying the show. Hopefully you enjoyed a pretty outstanding week of sports with the St. Louis Blues winning the Stanley Cup on Wednesday night for the first time in their history, and they've been in the league for 50-plus years now, 52 years. And then the Toronto Raptors winning last night. We were talking about this earlier in the show, and we had Kellen Olsen on at 6:30. Probably ultimately better for the NBA. And I'm not going to – last night's result isn't going to change anybody's opinion. Either you're somebody who likes to have a dynasty in your sport that everybody's gunning for, or you are somebody that likes to have more parity around your league. I don't necessarily need it to be so wide open. I mean, I love the NHL, but the NHL playoffs this year, I think, took a hit when all four division winners went out in the first round of the playoffs. That's cute in the moment, and then the second round rolls around, and you're looking at a bunch of wild cards playing each other. It's not ideal. You can have that every once in a while. And I think having it this year for the NHL wasn't the worst thing, because it puts that possibility out there now every year going forward. Like, the Blues won the Stanley Cup and they had the worst record in the league on January 2nd, which I ran the numbers to see what that would be the equivalent to in the other sports. And it was basically like 45% of the way through the NHL season, the Blues were in last place. They won the Stanley Cup. That would have meant the Baltimore Orioles would have won the World Series last year. It would have meant the Cleveland Cavaliers won the NBA championship. And it would have meant the Arizona Cardinals won the Super Bowl. So that, you know, that wouldn't have been the worst thing in the world. But that's cool to have every once in a while, but that's almost too much parity if it happens every year. The flip side, though, is the NBA. Last year, going into the season, we knew Golden State was going to beat Cleveland in the finals. Going into the season, not going into the finals, into the actual start of the preseason. And it was the same thing the year before. So I think the NBA needed a season like this where things got a little bit crazy. Not too crazy. I mean, Golden State still made it to the championship. And like I said earlier, I came away from that game last night and the series and just the playoffs as a whole, almost more impressed by Golden State. I know this sounds weird, than I was when they won last year, because he just kind of knew they were going to win last year. And it's not like they didn't have any adversity. But they just, and once they got to the finals, they just kind of cruised past Cleveland. LeBron didn't look like himself, and you can't win by yourself against a team like Golden State. Coming back to beat Houston in the Western Conference Finals, that was impressive, but Houston was missing Chris Paul. It's not like I wasn't impressed by Golden State winning the championship last year. It was just a different kind of thing this year, because you expected it last year. This year, they were more beat up than I can remember any NBA team being. Can you remember an NBA team being that physically beaten down by the end of a series, or by the end of a season, I should say?
I don't think so, but the way that I kind of have to look at it is that's what like four or five straight finals does to your body.
Yeah.
You know, these guys are playing like an extra month or two of basketball while everybody else is actually get time to rest. And then you have less time to rest, and then you have to get ready to go again.
Yeah.
So I think that's the way I kind of look at it, but I thought the injuries did take away from the finals.
It did a little bit, but at the same time, I wouldn't have been impressed by Golden State. Again, I know this sounds weird, so hopefully I'm conveying the point. I wouldn't have been impressed by Golden State if they were fully healthy and they just went out in 1-5, which is what I expected. I thought they were going to win in 5 or 6. But when KD came back, I thought that was, you know, that was high drama for him to come back. Game 5 was, I mean, that's a memorable game. That's going to go down in NBA history with him coming back and then him rupturing his Achilles and the fans cheering in Toronto that he's hurt. And then you could tell that sort of galvanized Golden State. That should have been the end of the series. Because at that point, if you're Golden State, Durant has come back. You've always had this thought like, oh, he might be able to come back. He comes back and he's done. And you know now, after finding out exactly what the injury was, that the players knew. That's why Steph was walking down the hall with them and Iguodala was walking down the hall in the middle of the game with Durant, because they knew. They knew he was done for the year. They knew he's probably done for next year. Just as a player to player, that sort of brotherhood, you know that on some level that altered his career. That should have been the end of the series. And then Golden State comes back in Toronto. And then Toronto goes out and gets it done last night. We haven't barely even talked about Kawhi and just how remarkably consistent he is. You watch these games and he'll have a game where he has like a quiet 34 points, but it'll be, okay, Toronto needs points, so here's Kawhi on a quick six-point run. And then he kind of disappears for a little bit, and he goes back, plays defense, and he comes back with four more points in this key moment. He just always gets it done. Always.
He's the first player in NBA history to win Finals MVP on both conferences.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Because it's him and Kareem and LeBron, right, are the only three to ever do it with two different teams. The only one to switch conferences.
Yep.
He even showed emotion last night at one point.
I know. I actually saw that. I think Rachel Nichols posted a little thing with Kyle Lowry and Kawhi, like post game, a little bit before their interview. And Kawhi was holding the Finals MVP trophy, and he was like, "Take it, Kyle." He's like, "You can have it. I already got one." And I was just like, and he's like laughing and having a good time with it. I was like, "Wow, Kawhi does feel."
But all it takes is ending a dynasty. That's the only thing that pleases Kawhi Leonard. It's the only thing that makes him show emotion.
Absolutely.
Ending dynasties.
Yeah, that's all he wants.
Like you said earlier, he's now ended Miami's dynasty, Golden State's dynasty, and then San Antonio's dynasty by leaving.
And the Drake curse. That was a dynasty of itself.
Like a reverse dynasty.
Yeah, that's true. Reverse dynasty.
But he, you're right, he did it. That might be the most impressive thing of all. Quick update from Washington, the D-backs. Fall to the Nationals by a final of 7-3. It just ended in the last few seconds. So Arizona's now won 7 of their last 9 instead of 7 of their last 8. Still on a pretty nice run. Ran into Max Scherzer tonight. I got to him for 2 runs in 7 innings, which is that's getting to Max Scherzer. I mean, I could do a lot more than that. He did strike out 10 D-backs. Robbie Ray, not a great game. 6 innings, 5 earned runs allowed, just the 6 strikeouts, 98 pitches. He's been up and down all year. For the most part, and I've said this before, for the most part, Robbie Ray is pretty effective when he's pitching. Not necessarily efficient, though. He's like the opposite of efficient, but he's been pretty effective. The player that stood out in this game, if you're a Diamondbacks fan, Carson Kelly, home run and a double in this one. He got a double in the 9th off Doolittle. It looked like it might start a rally. They got runners on 1st and 2nd in the 9th inning, but couldn't get any actual runs across against Doolittle, so they lose by a final of 7-3. Robbie Ray takes the loss. Max Scherzer gets the win. But Carson Kelly continuing to heat up, and Luke Robbins behind the glass and I were talking about this a little bit earlier off the air. It's too early to say the D-backs won the Paul Goldschmidt trade, and St. Louis could go on and win the World Series or whatever with Paul Goldschmidt this year. But as somebody that hated that trade when it happened, I'm feeling better about it like by the week.
I agree.
It's tough because Luke Weaver's hurt right now, but I mean, how are you supposed to know that's going to happen?
Yeah, it is way too early. Way too early.
Yeah.
But you have to be very happy, I think, with just what you've seen so far.
And considering the way that trade was set up, I mean, St. Louis knows what they're getting in Paul Goldschmidt. You can sit there and say, oh, he's, you know, in the second half of his career, maybe he won't be as great. That's fine. But they know what they're getting in Paul Goldschmidt. They know who he is. But from the Diamondbacks' perspective, you are getting Luke Weaver, Carson Kelly, and there's other pieces involved. But you're talking about two guys that really hadn't made their mark in Major League Baseball yet. So I'm almost at the point where St. Louis go out and win the World Series with Paul Goldschmidt this year. That's fine. I don't think any Diamondbacks fans would be upset. I think Diamondbacks fans would be pretty happy to see Goldschmidt win. If Kelly and Weaver end up evolving into the players it looks like they might evolve into, doesn't that make you feel pretty good about this front office going forward as a Diamondbacks fan? Almost in any trade where they're getting guys that maybe you haven't heard of or at least haven't seen play before, or they've younger players like Weaver that have been in the league but haven't really done anything yet. Doesn't it make you feel good about Mike Hazen's ability to pick out guys that are going to turn into something good?
Absolutely. I think you have to. If these guys turn out, your front office traded your franchise guy for the last how many years?
It feels like forever.
They get somebody good, get some good pieces, man. You got to trust those guys.
Yeah. Yeah, and we'll see. Carson Kelly, 2-for-4 tonight. I mean, he's hitting .264 on the year. It's not like he's Cody Bellinger, but it feels like we're sort of getting to the point where Carson Kelly is the Diamondbacks' catcher. You know how the last couple of years, it's like, oh, the Diamondbacks have 5 catchers, it feels like. They always have 3 catchers on the roster. This guy catches for this guy and blah, blah, blah. And you're going to have that sometimes. You're going to have certain pitchers that have their catcher catch, and that's fine. But it feels like Carson Kelly is turning into the Diamondbacks' catcher, and the fact that he's doing that in year one with the team and he can hit, that's pretty encouraging. All right, when we come back, we'll talk a little Arizona Cardinals. We touched on it briefly earlier in the show, but mini camp is over. Now you're at that sort of dead time, but it's like the eye of the hurricane because training camp, preseason, not that far away. We'll get into that next. It's the Rundown with Luke Lipinski on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. Luke Lipinski back here with you. Luke Robbins behind the glass. I haven't listened super closely. Have you played? I haven't listened super closely to my own show. That's a good sign. Have you played Drake every single time?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. You did. You told me you were working on this, like going into the show.
I was working on this last night. When the Raptors won, I was like, all right, I got to work out. And I just listened to Drake the whole time. I'm like, all right, this is a song I'm going to use for the rejoin. Maybe this is a transition one. That's all I did last night.
I like the enthusiasm.
I'm working hard, man.
There's never a doubt. Your name's Luke. So
exactly.
We know what we're getting from a Luke. Two Lukes here on the show tonight. We'll get back into the NBA in just a second. But the Arizona Cardinals wrapping up minicamp this week. I feel like there's some excitement with this team right now, but it's not as much on Kyler Murray specifically as it was on Josh Rosen last year. We kind of talked about that earlier in the show. What is interesting to me, if you think about it with this team, is 9 of the 11 starters on offense are going to be different than they were in week 17 last year. So the simple fact that you had one of the most boring offenses in the history of football that we all witnessed last year, and we witnessed it for 16 games, the simple fact that the Cardinals are going to be so remarkably different just from that, whether they're good or not, just the fact that they are different is enough of a selling point. He added on top of the fact that it's the NFL and people want to get excited for football season when we get there. Just the simple fact that this team is going to be that different in personnel alone, I think is going to be a huge selling point for the Cardinals when training camp actually opens. Now we're sort of in that part where it's the manufactured drama and the storylines and you are putting out the top 100 lists of the NFL because you've got a month and a half here of no real football. So it's just looking for anything to talk about because the NFL has to be part of the sports calendar 12 months a year. And I'm not really complaining about that because I love some football. But when we get to training camp here in like a month and a half, you've got an offense that is completely different personnel-wise. It is going to look completely different in just in terms of how they run their offense. And this was something that came up a few times this week at minicamp. A couple of the players were asked about, you know, how does this offense look? And for the most part, they all played it close to the vest. And they were just kind of like, you know, it's, and we'll see. We'll see how it looks when we actually get there. Cliff Kingsbury has been playing it close to the vest since he got here. And he even said this week, you know, part of that, because he's the one getting pressed on it the most by the media. He's like, part of that is I just don't know yet. Like, I haven't implemented my college offense at the NFL level yet. And they haven't done it in minicamp. They basically had 2 days of minicamp. So there's that. But there is also a few different players. Akeem Butler was one of them. I'm trying to find the exact clip here. I can't. But essentially what he said was, you know, he started to talk about the offense. But, I actually found it. Here we go. This is it right here.
It's going to be fun. I don't want to say too much. I mean, I don't want Cliff to come after me. So I'm going to just say it's going to be fun.
That was sort of a theme throughout OTAs and minicamp. We don't want to give away too much. Now, he's joking about it right there. I mean, again, most of it isn't implemented. But there is now this thought of we're not going to see a whole lot of what this offense is going to look like, even in the preseason. And that's where you start to get into a real strategic dilemma. Do you want to go through the preseason and not show anything because your best chance early this season when you have a rookie quarterback and a rookie coach and you don't have Patrick Peterson, your best chance to win games is probably predicated on you surprising teams, surprising the Lions in week one. We got Baltimore, Carolina, Cincinnati, so like the first 6 games that Peterson's missing I know you've got those four teams and a couple others. Your best chance to win those games maybe is the element of surprise, considering you are talking about a rookie quarterback and a rookie head coach and a lot of rookie receivers. But the flip side is, don't those guys need reps running the actual offense you're going to run? And that, to me, right now on June 14th, is absolutely the biggest storyline for the Cardinals this preseason when we get there. Because you'll see this from year to year and team to team. And I thought Justin Pugh really, he sort of wrapped things up really well on Wednesday when he said, yeah, you know, I understand our offense is a mystery and it's a work in progress. That's most teams every year. It's maybe a little more extreme with the Cardinals this year, but he pointed out, like, other than like the Patriots, teams kind of go out there, figure out what they can do with their personnel. It's always some new pieces every year. And then what they realize they're doing well, that's what they stick to, and that's what they do more often. So it's not like the Cardinals are on an island with the idea that we don't know exactly what the offense is going to look like yet. But it's really extreme with them, obviously. And when you factor in all the new pieces, and Christian Kirk is like a veteran in the wide receiver group, he's played 12 NFL games. It's a real fine line between just running bland offensive plays in the preseason to keep your actual air raid or whatever version of it you want to call under wraps until the games actually count. There's a fine line you have to walk between doing that and also getting Kyler Murray and Larry Fitzgerald and David Johnson and the offensive line reps with this new offense. It's going to be interesting to see what they do.
Do you think, though, it's going to be probably more of a developmental year, just like getting everything in place and rookie quarterback? I feel like it's probably going to start off rough, but if you see signs, especially towards the end of the season, midway through the end of the season, like, that's what matters, right?
Yeah.
With this team?
Yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. But the problem, this team could pass the eye test for me and still go like 4-12. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, absolutely.
Because they could do what you're saying. Maybe you only go 1-5 in those games without Patrick Peterson. But you win 3 of your last 10, or maybe you win 3 of the last 6 or something. They just look better and you feel better about the team. But at the same time, if you get through the season and you've won one more game than last year, I mean, is that enough for Steve Keim to keep his job?
Well, for him,
yeah.
Probably not, yeah. I would say.
And I guess that's a different conversation. But I mean, there's going to be a lot of storylines this season with this Cardinals team that are more than just, hey, they had the first pick and they got Kyler Murray. And they're going to evolve over the course of the season. But I'm telling you, the biggest one in preseason is, how much of your offense are you willing to show to other teams? Or are you banking on the element of surprise for all of your early season wins? Back to the NBA, I heard this point earlier on our airwaves. I think it was Dave Burns that said it. You now have 8, 9, 10, 7, depending on who you are. You've got, you know, let's say 7 to 10 teams with a realistic shot right now, middle of June, of winning the NBA championship next year. That can honestly feel like they have a chance. I mean, I guess you almost even have to throw New Orleans in there right now until they trade Anthony Davis. I mean, they're not going to win. But you have, you know, we go into every season, and it used to be this way in baseball when there was like 3 teams that spent all the money and there was 20 teams that had no chance of winning, but they'd go through spring training and be like, oh yeah, we feel like we can do it this year, and they had no shot. That's been the NBA the last couple years. Golden State was going to win each year. LeBron was probably going to get Cleveland to the finals to lose to Golden State each of the last couple of years, and he obviously stole the one in 2016. By the way, underrated element to all the great moves Toronto made this offseason, there's the trade to get Kawhi, which I love that they went all in and got rewarded for that. There is moving on from the reigning coach of the year after last season and going out there and making the switch to Nick Nurse. Lost in the shuffle, one of the best moves for Toronto, wasn't as good as going out getting Kawhi, was LeBron moving to the West, right? I mean, that's who they couldn't get over.
That was who the Raptors couldn't beat, was LeBron.
Nobody's talked about that, it feels like.
No, I really don't. I mean, I think this year with Kawhi, I think they still would have overcame LeBron.
Probably, yeah.
But yeah, that's still, the boogeyman is gone.
Yeah.
And nobody's talking about it.
It's that was a major part of them winning. Don't just look past that, because if you're not in the finals, then you're not beating Golden State. But getting back to what I was saying here at the start of this, if there's 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 teams that feel like they can win, even if there's only, you know, when we get to the start of the season, maybe 5 or 6 again that have a legitimate shot, going into free agency, if that many teams feel like they can win, that's going to make it a lot harder for a team like the Suns, maybe, to just go out there and be like, okay, we want this point guard. He's not amazing. He's the 15th best point guard in the NBA, but he's a huge upgrade for us, and we want to go out there and get him. Well, there's other teams with money, and whereas in years past, some of those teams have been like, and we're not going to spend that money on, pick whoever you want as the point guard, Collison. Let's just say Darren Collison. Those teams now might look and say, like, oh, actually, if we had him, maybe we could make the Western Conference Finals or something. Now it's kind of wide open. So that might make things a little bit difficult and different for the Suns to just go out there and pick and choose more of the mid-tier players they want. But by and large, I've had this conversation with a lot of Suns fans over the last few years, and the genesis of the timeline was, what's the point of trying to win now when Golden State is great and nobody's going to beat them anyway? That's over. Golden State, I don't think they're just like done and gone forever. I mean, they may end up with Klay and KD and get them back two seasons from now or whatever. But if you were waiting, if you were a team, and the Suns aren't there yet, but if you were a team that was waiting on Golden State to fall to try and make your push, it's now. And that starts with free agency in a couple weeks. So this is now going to be a very crazy free agency period in a completely different way. It's not so crazy of KD is going to move, Kawhi is going to move, Anthony Davis is going to move. Those three things may all happen still. But now it's like you have a lot of other teams that feel like they could actually win in 2020. All right, we come back, we will hear from Tim Legler, who joined the Doug and Wolf show this morning. And one last look at the D-backs game from Washington tonight as well. It's the Rundown with Luke Lipinski on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Welcome back to the show. Luke Lipinski here with you. Tim Legler, with the chaos now in front of us in the NBA, joined Doug and Wolf early this morning. Here's a portion of that interview right now.
Out of everything that you saw, what is your most memorable moment of the finals?
Wow. Let's say if you pinpointed it to a moment, it would have to be Kevin Durant getting hurt.
That's what I thought.
He came back and it ruptured his Achilles. Like if you're having a snapshot, that's hard to get out of your mind. But I think overall, what I'm going to try to remember about this series and particularly this team, Kawhi Leonard's performance over the last 2 months was literally one of the best postseason runs, I think, in NBA history. It's certainly one of the most dominant that I've covered, 18 years at ESPN. And I was in the league for 10 years when Michael Jordan won 6 championships, so I had to guard that guy up close and personal, even played that team in the playoffs when I was in Washington. So I know, you know, what he did and how dominant he was. Kawhi Leonard, I think the best description would be machine-like. He was as close to a machine as anything I've seen over the last 2 months. Just his precision, his consistency, how great he was and under pressure, automatic at the foul line, never changes his demeanor. You can't speed him up. He plays at the pace he wants because of his physical strength. Just unbelievably impressed with how much Kawhi Leonard has added to his game since he came into the league, that he's able to put a team on his back offensively the way that he did and drive that engine every single night. And really can't think of a bad game that he had for two months.
Boy, Timmy, I totally agree with you, first and foremost. But do you think the odds of him staying there are good? Because I think he's probably going to leave. What do you think?
I mean, that's what everybody is saying. And you know, all I can say is, it's, you know, your guess is literally as good as mine, because you're talking about a guy that doesn't really open up the curtain, right? You don't know.
Right.
He just is one of those guys that doesn't talk. Last night he was asked about it on our network and after the game, and he said, well, you know, you guys know the calendar. You know when free agency starts, so that should give you a pretty good idea when you're going to find out what I'm going to do. And that's about the extent of what you get. He did say something last night that, if I'm a Raptors fan, gives me a little bit of hope, which is he was talking about the chemistry in the locker room of this team and how they don't have any personal issues. There's no clashes. Everyone gets along, cares about each other. It's a healthy locker room. Now, he wasn't taking a shot at San Antonio, I didn't believe, there. I think he was just commenting on the health of this locker room. And the reason I think that's really important to a guy like Kawhi Leonard He wants to lead the way that he led, which is by example, by playing. Just go out and play. Let me do my thing. And the more fires you have to put out as a leader, the less enjoyable the whole experience becomes. It doesn't sound like he dealt with any of that. And I think that's something he's got to consider. You know, it's ironic, though, is all this talk of Jasai McGeary and what he's going to get offered by Washington. And it looks like, you know, he's going to be headed to the Wizards because they're going to make him an offer he can't refuse. You know, it's weird, but in some ways, will that affect Kawhi Leonard's decision? Because he's the guy that brought him there. He's the architect of this team. They made other moves that really paid off. Danny Green, Marc Gasol, you know, these drafting Pascal Siakam. You know, this is, it's his baby. And if he leaves, does that make it less attractive to Kawhi Leonard? But I just like what he said about how enjoyable this was every day around this group of guys. And for a guy like Kawhi Leonard, I think that's really important.
And if I can add to your point about Ujiri, you got to throw in when you fire a coach of the year and say, we want Nick Nurse, who's never coached a day in the NBA as a head coach, to be our guy.
There you go,
that's pretty gutsy, too. So having said that, if you are either Ujiri and you're staying, or the next guy in charge of the Toronto Raptors, if you lose Kawhi Leonard, do you tear the whole thing down, Legs? Because what do you have left?
Yeah, it's you go into rebuild mode, and it's unfortunate because they've got a young, you know, with that guy that I think played at an all-star level the second half of the year in Pascal Siakam. I think he's going to be a perennial all-star going forward. I just think he's got that diverse skill set that affects the game in so many ways. And it's, you know, you could see it grow. I actually said it coming out of preseason. I said this guy's going to be the most improved player in the league because he added a handle and a three-point shot in one offseason. It's very hard to do in this league. So I think the confidence he's going to have now, you're talking about an all-star caliber player, but he's not a franchise carrier. He's not a guy that now you go, okay, Kawhi walks. You know, you've got some other older veteran guys you're obviously going to not be as interested in if you don't have Kawhi Leonard. Pascal Siakam is not on that level where he's going to be able to now, you know, just keep this thing rolling as your best player. So, yeah, I think at that point you would be in rebuild mode, and it would be someone else's problem potentially if Masai leaves and Kawhi leaves. You know, somebody else has to come in, clean this mess up, and figure out where you go from there. But I think there'll be a lot of patience with the Toronto Raptors fan base. I mean, they waited their entire existence to get last night. So I think that's going to buy some equity, and so whoever comes in will have some time. And at least we do have one really key young piece in Pascal Siakam that's a great place to start. But that's not going to be on a level of what you had with a Kawhi Leonard, for sure.
ESPN NBA analyst Tim Legler joining us here on the Doug and Wolf Show. Timmy, did we see the end of the dynasty? The end of the dynasty for the Warriors?
I think at the level that we thought, definitely. But I would say it might be premature to think we're never going to see this team contend in the Western Conference again or potentially play in an NBA final, because Klay Thompson is going to come back from this 100%. I mean, the procedure has changed so dramatically from when I played, and I have two ACL reconstructions, and it's just less invasive. The rehab is so much more advanced. He's a jump shooter. He's not a high flyer. He's not a guy that relies on explosiveness. He's going to come back 100%, even if he misses all of next season, and I think he stays there. I think they make him a max offer, and they keep him in-house. I think he and Kelly hopefully play their whole career together. Even if Durant leaves, that's a pretty good place to start. Steph Curry and Klay Thompson are the best shooting tandem in NBA history.
Agreed.
You know, you're going to be able, and they're easy to play with because of their style. You're going to be able to continue, and they've got a really smart front office. They're going to add pieces, and they're going to stay in contention. Next year is going to be difficult because you're talking about Kevin Durant, Klay Thompson potentially not playing all season, even if Durant stays, and he could go. So that next year, it might be a step back. But long term, you know, the 3 years after that, everyone stay contending in the West. So I don't think it's over. I just don't think you're going to see the level of dominance that you saw at their height over the last 5 years.
Wonder how long we could go before we ran out of Drake song. We'd go for a while, right?
Well, that was the thing too, is I was like, there's so many songs, and I have a list I showed someone earlier of just songs I was like, you know, these are potential songs I could use.
Yeah,
I had like at least 30.
Did you have to cut any of them to like?
Oh yeah, okay, yeah, because okay. Some of them don't have very good instrumentals out there.
Yeah,
you know, so I was like, dang, no pop style, no some of the other big ones.
And but, there's a certain point where if he says anything, you can't play it on the air.
Oh so, well, yeah, there's a lot of songs like that. That's you have to find some special ones.
This is 110% from Luke Robbins behind the glass.
It's just what a Luke does.
That's you know what? That's a great point, Luke.
It's very self-involved, but hey,
you know what? That's the way it is. Sometimes the truth is self-involved. We didn't get to touch on this much, actually, at all during the show yet. The Diamondbacks, by the way, lost tonight 7-3 in Washington. So they have still won 7 of their last 9. At the moment, 2.5 games out of a wild card spot in the National League. So this could get interesting. 2.5 back, Colorado's 2 back. Right now, the Cubs and Phillies are in the wild card spots. Don't even worry about the Dodgers for now. You know, you can worry about the Dodgers again when the Diamondbacks are playing them or if they potentially get there and somehow meet them in the playoffs. But Zach Greinke last night, and I do feel like we at least need to touch on this, gave up just the 2 hits in 7 innings. A pretty standard Greinke. Hey, this was even a little bit better, though. 7 1/3, 2 hits, no earned runs, struck out 3, no walks. Had the no-hit bid going for a while, and Torrey Lovello was asked about it after the game.
It was really fun to watch while it was going on. I keep saying we're fans, too, and the no-hit bid was realistic. Unfortunately, a couple of things popped up, and that's just the beauty of the game.
Now, I mean, there was sort of a miscue in the field that ended up breaking up the no-hit bid, but also there was weather, and they weren't gonna have Zach Greinke sit for basically an hour, and then send him out there to keep it going. It wasn't, you know, the no hitter is another thing in sports that's a fine line to walk. If you're a manager, you don't want your pitcher throwing 140 pitches to get the no hitter, but you don't want to take away his shot at history either. So that's a balance you have to find. Last night it wasn't that hard, and then ultimately the Nationals did get a hit, so the Torrey Lovello's job was made easier. It's also made easier by the fact that Zach Greinke really doesn't seem to care if he throws a no-hitter.
It just probably be more hassle than anything.
Why is that?
It's just like the Sports Illustrated article. It was just a bunch of nonsense comes with it.
Greinke's outstanding, man. Greinke's the best, because it's not an act. If he says it's just going to be a hassle if he throws a no-hitter, then it's just going to be a hassle to him, right? I mean, he's not, like, making that up.
No, that's amazing. I haven't heard that yet, actually. Oh, that was amazing, man.
What's the Sports Illustrated article he's referencing?
I don't know. They'll probably just be like, oh, you know, no-hitter alert, and he did it. Yeah. He's a great pitcher. Yeah. And he's like,
no interest.
Yeah, stop telling me I'm good.
Waste of my time. I could be getting somebody out. Now, I don't know how well his outlook on everything would fly if he was, you know, even just a mediocre pitcher. He's one of like the 5 best in baseball right now. So he could say whatever he wants, but he's been consistently great throughout his entire career, and that has consistently been his stance on things throughout his career. Maybe not to that extreme where, yeah, I had a no hit bid going, but it was really just kind of a hassle for me, and then just a bunch of nonsense would have come along if I completed it. But that is one of the most Zach Greinke quotes of all time. And he, make no mistake about it, he's the team MVP right now. You know, if you had to vote basically midway through the season, he's at this point, he's the main reason that they're in this. Because Luke Weaver, you got to have guys that are exceeding expectations, and Weaver was doing that. And Christian Walker was doing it for a while, but Walker's cooled off and Weaver's hurt. But, I mean, every time Greinke pitches, it almost doesn't even matter who the Diamondbacks are playing. You sort of expect them to win, don't you? And he'll be out there again Wednesday against Colorado. Tomorrow, it's going to be Taylor Clark against Steven Strasburg. D-backs don't really know who their pitcher is on Sunday yet. That's what happens when all of your pitchers are hurt. But it should be Merrill Kelly, Zach Greinke, and Robbie Ray that go against the Rockies Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, back at home at Chase Field. And that's a pretty big series. All right, we come back. It wasn't really a bet, but I got to pay something off as we wrap up the show here. Toronto did win the championship, which I did not expect, and they won in exactly 6 games, which I did not need. That's next. It's the Rundown with Luke Lipinski on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station. All right, final segment of the show. Luke Lipinski here with you. Luke Robbins behind the glass. Luke Robbins behind the glass, do you have any idea what's about to happen here?
No, I really don't.
Okay. You weren't here when this all went down.
No, I was not.
Okay, so Tyler Drake is here from ArizonaSports.com. Taylor Kinnerup is here from... Where are you from? Well, I'm letting you introduce yourself.
I am the reporter and evening anchor on KTAR.
All right, well, maybe I didn't know that.
You don't know a lot of things.
Well, that was proven, apparently, at some point in the last couple weeks. So... We were playing some game with Mitch Vareldis, who was running the board, and I was ambushed. Kellen Olson came in. Tyler was here. Tyler's here as the witness again tonight. And Taylor walked in. And we did like five different topics, but one of them was, how are the NBA finals going to play out? And it's not important what I picked. I know what I picked, but that's in the past. But
can you recap for anybody who didn't hear?
I listened. I went back and listened to it, and I believe I had Warriors in five. And not only that, I was willing to bet people on the air, and none of you took me up on it.
I should have. I just sat out there. I should have made money off my claim. But
yeah, I think I said five too.
Well, that's what should have happened. But anyway, as it turns out, Toronto 1-6, and somebody picked it exactly. So what do you have to say for yourself?
I'd like to thank not only God, but Shea Serrano for that tweet.
Both of them. Same thanks. Wow, okay.
It's like thanking the same person. It was almost redundant. I love Shea Serrano.
I don't even know where to go after that.
Yeah. He did not like my victory tweet, but that's okay.
You still like him, though? You still care about Shea Serrano?
I still love him deeply, like a father. I have a father, and he's great, but...
And hopefully he's not listening
right now.
Happy Father's
Day. He's in Mexico with his friends.
Oh, okay.
That's how he's celebrating Father's Day.
That's actually a pretty good way to celebrate.
Right?
So your Father's Day present to him is to tell him that you love Shea Serrano like he's your dad, basically.
Yeah, happy Father's Day, Shea Serrano.
We need to save this and send it to him. How much more invested were you in this series when it started to look like Toronto might win in six games?
I was purely invested for proving you wrong.
Yeah, I understand why.
And I think that's why my pureness of heart is what helped the Raptors through.
Your victory lap was pretty
I'm not sure
we
consider this
too.
Pureness of heart. It was just to make me look bad.
Yes, and it was awesome. You do this for a living, and I was right compared to you. I literally do not get paid to talk about sports.
Everybody picked Golden State to win that series, except you and Shea Serrano, apparently.
Well, yeah, that's true. And Tyler's right. My victory lap, which you can see on Twitter, is amazing.
He might not have liked it, though, because of what you said at the end of your victory lap.
Quote, suck it, sports fan.
Thank you.
Which was more of
Thank you for that.
I feel bad for the people who have invested a lot of time and money researching and watching every game and knowing every stat about every player when someone like me, an idiot when it comes to sports, can come and make a guess.
I give you this
right.
platform to come on the air and you call yourself an idiot.
This is your greatest dream.
Yeah, pretty
and
much.
Your greatest fear all in one.
It's all rolled into one. For the record, I would still pick the Warriors in five. I don't understand how they lost that series. Do you have any other
still be wrong.
Prediction? Yeah, I would. Do you have any other predictions
yeah.
for us here?
Since I want to hear the rest of
everything?
This.
I'm coming for your job.
Oh, that's fine. Here, you can have the last 2 minutes of the show.
If Hatch is listening, I will take it.
Oh, good. So now we're making this even more personal. Where are the Diamondbacks going to finish?
Yeah, exactly.
I'm going to write all these down, too. Let's see. Diamondbacks...
Upper middle of the pack.
Upper middle of the pack. Okay.
That is my that's very,
very
safe
specific.
Guess.
Yeah, okay. So
like 75%, 80,
yeah,
82.
I don't even know what numbers to throw out here. I don't know if we're going. I don't even.
Upper middle is like 67.
Basically,
oh, yeah, I guess
sure.
You just said the Diamondbacks will finish in Major League Baseball this year. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay.
Which I think is a bold claim, all things considered.
Does Shea Serrano have any other tweets you want to throw out there?
You know, I haven't gone through them extensively.
Do you have a World Series prediction?
Yeah, that would help. How into that game were you last night?
I was so invested.
Yeah, I know.
I cannot even begin to tell you.
And just to put this in perspective, you weren't necessarily that invested in the NBA Finals like a year ago.
Absolutely not. Okay. I did not invest much time in basketball at all. Until I came on the show and made this prediction and realized I could make you look bad in front of all the people who listen to you.
Think
Hello,
how silly
people.
I'm going to sound if the Diamondbacks finish in the upper middle pack of Major League Baseball.
Top 67%.
That was such a generic, random take that there's probably a strong chance it's true, but also it doesn't mean anything.
You can see that I wrote
I
this down.
I just said gibberish
though.
On the air, essentially.
Well, we all do that. That's basically what we all get paid for. All right, Taylor. Congratulations on your win. It really ruined the NBA Finals for me. I was much more invested than usual. I was openly polling for Golden State last night in a room full of people that thought there was something wrong with me.
Yeah, yeah.
It's something wrong with me.
Yeah, but not...
Not that,
separate
sorry.
From that, yes.
Yeah, I was... At the end of it, I was like, come on, please be right, Taylor. As much as
you were here
it,
to be on my side.
I understand that, but as much as it pained me to say it,
okay, we have
I couldn't.
Go.
I couldn't see the Warriors here.
All right, thanks Luke Robbins behind the glass, Tyler Drake, Taylor Kinnerup. I'm Luke Lipinski. Thanks for listening to Rundown on 98.7 FM Arizona Sports Station.